We have some visitors here this morning. I don't know all of you, but I do know one for sure, and that's Grace Evans, and she brought Wally, her husband. Make sure you send your greetings to them. And this is Sandy Webb's last Sunday here for the summer. She's a summer intern. Where is she? There you are. Your head's behind somebody. She has done a great job for us. She's a deaf intern at Sunset, as you may know. You've seen her signing. But she's done more than that. She's gone up and taught 8 weeks of classes up at Newport to train someone, to train the Episcopalian Commons residents who want to learn sign language to reach out to a new young resident named Seth. She's also done a lot of work with Lisa besides that. And she has really got to know a lot of people in the congregation over that time. And she's also been here on her own support and some support that others have personally donated to her. If you intended to support her any while she was here, and you just need to let her know, because she'll be leaving Thursday, correct? What's that?
Friday morning.
And thank you, Sandy. We hope that you come back after graduation. We'll be keeping in touch with you, okay? And also remember Dolores Hauer. Jana told me that she had another two put back in her. I'm going to go up and see her after church. If somebody would like to go up with me, see her for a short visit, I have an extra seat if you would like to do that. And we're in part three of our series, The Coping Christian in One Nation Under Satan. And that sounds very negative, but I haven't had anybody tell me that it's been a negative series to them. It's been a sobering series. In the first lesson, we covered the very basic document that we started out with in this country, the Declaration of Independence. And it says that we are endowed by our Creator with unalienable rights. That was the basis of the Declaration of Independence. As I mentioned last week, the Webbs loaned me a framed copy of their Declaration of Independence. Go back and look at it. Starts out with God, ends with God, and signed the death. You can pretty much call that a death warrant, because they signed on there, I'm willing to give my life, my fortune, my everything, because I'm standing on that principle. And so anybody who says to you that our nation did not start out with the intention of believing that there is a Creator and our rights come from a Creator, I'll give you 56 people who are willing to sign their life off on that very fact that they did. Who do you know back in 1776 who was there who contradicts that? You're not going to find them. And then in in lesson two, we covered a lot of the early church fathers. What did they do? Founding fathers of our country. What were they teaching? What were they saying? What was the atmosphere? And we can conclude that they were doing their best to carry that principle on even after the Revolutionary War. Now, in this lesson, I want to cover, because we're going to be covering one of the turns from being one nation under God, there's a lot of points where we deviated from that very point. As early as the signing of the Constitution, we deviated from it. But there's a lot of other turning points along the way. And part three, I want to cover early education in one nation under God. What was life like in this early country for education? You remember that those who control the youth really control the future. That was what Adolf Hitler said. But he was only repeating what has been passed down for thousands of years. However the youth goes, that's how the nation goes in the long run. And what I'd like to cover this morning is to show you what a radical difference it is from the early American history for education and what it is today. On April 20th, 1999, Two young men wearing long black trench coats opened fire in a suburban school in Littleton, Colorado. We call that Columbine. 20 students were injured and 15 were killed. And it was a terrible, terrible day. But it didn't end there. March 5th, 2001. I'm only going to give you just a few examples of the hundreds of examples of the violence in our schools today. March 5th, 2001, a 15-year-old freshman in Santee, California, opens fire on 15 classmates, injuring 13, kills two. September 24th, 2003, a high school freshman in Cold Spring, Minnesota, walked in his classroom and shot cold death at that point into two classmates, just shot him dead. March 21st, you have another example in Red Lake, Minnesota, a young man kills his grandparents and then goes to school and murders five of his fellow students. In April 16, 2007, a man walks onto a student from Virginia Tech. A lot of you remember that one. Enters the academic building, shoots 30 victims to death and commits suicide. You have February 14th. You have a young student at DeKalb, Illinois, walks onto the university campus, shoots five students dead, kills or wounds 18 more before taking his own life. February 27th, you have Chardon High School in Ohio. Student goes to school, kills three of his classmates. December 14th, Adam Lanza goes to Sandy Hook Elementary. You think one of the safest places on earth might be an elementary school? We were proven wrong on that day. He had a result of 26 dead, including 20 first graders. June 7th, 2013, 23-year-old college student kills his father, then brother, goes to Santa Monica College, shoots many others, killing three of them. I mean, you might be asking yourself, what is this world coming to? I don't remember when I grew up all these things happening. And that's sad. Now, I'm sure there were some bad things that happened, but I've left hundreds of examples out from our hopeless students. And I believe the reason why is because we are raising a generation of kids in our country who no longer have a hope based in something higher than them, but that which comes through evolved monkeys, that which comes through a hopeless teaching. We're going to test that theory out this morning, though. America of yesteryears remembers going to school and feeling safe. I never felt unsafe at school, ever. Never had that happen. Today, our schools are beginning to resemble military bases. A lot of them have metal detectors, cameras in the hall, filming things. Some people even have policemen patrolling the hallways of schools. It looks like something out of the Gestapo. But what happened? How is this occurring? If you ask anyone from the last generation, they'll tell you these things have not always been. If you're under the age of 20, this isn't how the normal country ran things back when people over 20 were growing up. We just didn't have it. I want to cover some of the first education laws in this nation. One would think, looking at the schools today, that it's always been a separation of church and state, which is a lie. We have a whole lesson dedicated to that lie, that myth.
Yes, sir.
Okay? But that myth, the media wants you to think, oh, the education in our country has always been secular. Act, wrong answer. The secularists want you to believe, oh, it was always a separation of church and state. They never allowed anything in schools to do with God. They lie, or they're willingly ignorant. Choose, because truth is truth, and this is the truth. The first law in our country, the first law concerning education on American soil was the Old Deluder Satan Act of 1647 in Massachusetts. It was the first law predating the Declaration of Independence by 129 years. This is what it said. It being the chief project of that old deluder Satan to keep men from knowledge of the scriptures, as in the former time. It is therefore ordered that after the Lord hath increased the settlement to the number of 50 households, they shall forthwith appoint within their own town to teach all such children, shall resort to him, and to write and read. And is further ordered that where any town shall increase to the number of 100 families or households, they shall set up grammar school to instruct the youth as far as they may be fitted for the university. That's pretty simple. They were saying that we might have to make sure that our kids do not fall into this realm of ignorance, because they came from the dark ages. They came from a time where people could not read. Nobody had a copy of the Bible, but when the press was made, everybody has a reason to learn. If you want to ruin a civilization, make them ignorant.
Yes, sir.
Make them stupid. Make them to where they don't understand anything. The very people who are trying to dumb down America are the ones who are trying to assist the devil in deluding us. And remember, if we forget our history, we're failed to repeat it. We will repeat it. The early founders of this country knew that our adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. They wanted to make sure that this devil who steals, kills, and destroys, that his ways of ignorance do not creep into the people to where they can be held to a standard of naivety, to where they cannot even defend what it is they believe. They just have to accept the guy who can read. In 217 years from 1620, the Pilgrims landed. Until the Pilgrims landed in 1837, from when the Pilgrims landed in 1620 to 1837, the American literacy rate in our country went to only 3 to 4/10 of 1% could not read. That's from John Quincy Adams. 3/10 of 1% could not read in our country. When the illiteracy rate of other industrialized nations of that time were averaging 48% could not read, we didn't even have 1% that could not read. What were we doing different than all other nations in the world at that time? We were teaching what the scriptures were saying. There's what's called the Northwest Ordinance. The Northwest Ordinance. Here's what it said. Article 1. No person demeaning himself in a peaceable and orderly manner shall be molested on accounts of his mode of worship or religious sentiments in said territory. Now the Founding Fathers wanted to... There were other territories that wanted to join the United States. You know, you had areas west of the Ohio Valley, you know, all these states who wanted to say, we don't want to be a territory, we want to join the United States. And they had written into the Northwest Ordinance, in order for you to become a state, you have to agree you will not molest anyone from having freedom of religion. They were specifically talking about Christianity, as you'll see. But they didn't want to go back to the system of Europe, where they oppressed people and then fed them a man-made religion. They wanted this to be the instructor guide. You know, the two books that Thomas Jefferson required at the University of Virginia as the first president was the Holy Bible and Isaac Watts' Hymnal. If that gives you any indication on what the religious persuasion was of that day. But I want you to see particular Article 3 of the Northwest Ordinance. This was, the beginning of the writing was before the Constitution, was ratified after the Constitution. This is not 1776, this is 1787. Listen to what they say. Religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall be forever encouraged. They were saying that you must encourage the Christian faith. If you don't do that, if that's not your job in the schools, if you're not teaching these principles of morality found in the Bible, you can't be, You cannot move from territory to being a member of the United States of America. You can't do that. The message was clear. They had to have religion, morality, and knowledge had to be put together in the school systems as the core curriculum. It was necessary to good government and happiness of mankind. They weren't talking about Sweden. They were talking about America. The Northwest Ordinance was passed at the same time as the Constitution and the First Amendment. We know the original intent of the fathers concerning this law, yet today you cannot even have a plaque of the Ten Commandments. Take a plaque of the Ten Commandments to school. Ask them to hang it up. Oh, you can't do that. Like in DeKalb County, Georgia, back in the 90s, there was this guy up for trial for murder. And the judge ordered the Ten Commandment plaques covered because the jurors were walking by and they might be influenced by the statement, "Thou shalt not kill." Oh, what a pitiful nation we've become in the eyes of God. Something lacking in education today would be the absence of moral values found in the Bible. We've replaced them with outcome-based education and values clarification. Everything is subjective. Everyone does that which is right in their own eyes. You want to know why? Because there is no king in Israel. Our leadership has fallen off the edge of a cliff. We have leaders lick their finger and see what way the wind blows, and I'm going that way. That isn't leadership. And I'm not talking just the president. I'm talking from the president all the way down. Whoever licks their finger and follows polls isn't leading. They're not leading. They're following. That is a true statement. And it cuts across all party lines. Independent, Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, whatever other party, Martian party. If you do that, that's the quality of a follower, not a leader. And they wanted to make sure they would lead the people into a way of faith. Look at the early reading material. Go back to the Bible. When it said in Deuteronomy 4, 6, 4 through 9, teach these things, teach these things, teach these things to your children. They took that serious. Let's cover some of the early teaching material in One Nation Under God. We have a lot of school teachers here. Great. Imagine how easy your job would be if you got to use this material in your classrooms today. Start out with the New England Primer. The New England Primer. It was how our nation taught our kids to learn the ABCs. Okay? Before there was A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Don't try to finish it. Okay, kids? Before that, you had the New England Primer. You want to know how you get to 0.3% literacy rate in a nation? They combined education and the Bible to teach it. Because they knew that God was close to the heart of the people. And whatever you have heart in, that you will excel in. Yes, and the nation had a heart for God. Materials we used to teach children in the Northeast all had Christian themes. Here, let's learn the alphabet. How they did 200 years ago. A, in Adam's fall, we sinned all. B, heaven defined, the Bible mine. C, Christ crucified, for sinners died. D, the deluge drowned, the earth around. E, Elijah hid, by ravens fed. F, the judgment made, Felix afraid. G, as runs the glass, our life doth pass. H, my book and heart must never part. Right there, they're not talking about a magazine, they're talking about the Bible. You have J, Job fills the rod, yet blesses God. K, proud Korah's troop was swallowed up. L, Lot fled Zoar, saw a fiery shower on Sodom poor. M, Moses was he who Israel's host led through the sea. N, Noah did view the old world and new. O, young Obadiah, David, Josias were all pious. P, Peter denied his Lord and cried. Q, Queen Esther sues and saves the Jews. R, young pious Ruth left all for truth. S, young Samuel, dear, the Lord did fear. T, young Timothy learned sin to flee. V, Vashti for pride was sent aside. W, whales in the sea, God's voice obey. Xerxes did die, and so must I for X. Y, while youth do cheer, the death may be near. And Z, Zacchaeus did climb a tree, our Lord to see. That's how they learned the ABCs. They took that serious. They said, listen, we want you to love God, that whatever you do, if you're going to learn, we want you to learn what you need to learn and what you have to learn. They combined the two together. And so if you could imagine, we just surveyed the Bible right here. Any kid in New England who learned how to learn the letters of the alphabet, they also learned the outline of the Bible too. Take that into kindergarten if you're a kindergarten teacher. Teach your kids like that today. You will lose your job because you'll be counted as an evil person for trying to pollute the minds of children. You know what the primary textbook was? You didn't have to go through California. You didn't have to go through Texas. You had one standard, and that was the McGuffey Reader. Publication was named and after the author, Reverend William McGuffey. Publisher came to him and said, we want textbooks put together that reflect what our national values are with keeping people close to God. And this man named William McGuffey came up with it, and he incorporated Christian morality with learning. And then, and you know, do you know they still sell 30,000 of these a year? They do, to homeschoolers. They've been revised a little bit. They don't have many doth and whithersoever the governor listeth statements in it. But they do have, so 30,000 homeschoolers buy these every year. And so this isn't just some part of ancient history. They're proven, and those kids excel in this series of books. Schools used to use the Webster Dictionary. Before Merriam-Webster, there was the Webster Dictionary, written by Noah Webster, a signer of the Constitution. Written on the inside of the original covers of the original dictionaries, it said of Noah Webster, the man that taught millions to read and none to sin. Taught millions to read and none to sin. Well, why would they say that? Because 25% of all definitions of all the words used biblical phrases and actual verses out of the Bible. You could not go through a dictionary without reading all these verses and understanding. If you looked up fruit, you found something about Adam and Eve. You know, you can even go online. There's a website. You can go online. Somebody put down the entire original Noah Webster's dictionary. Put it, the entire thing down there. And you can type in whatever word, and it'll give you the original definition of the word. And it's just like reading the Bible. The man who taught millions to read and none to sin. Because it was his goal to combine any learning with the learning of God. He would go on later to say, education of our youth should be watched with the most scrupulous attention. It is much easier to introduce and establish an effectual system than to correct by penal statutes the ill effects of a bad system. Education of youth lays the foundation on which both law and gospel rest for success. Amazon would probably pull the original one off the line today. We're so politically correct, we can't talk about God. You know, it was politically incorrect not to talk about God back then. Your conversation needed to be filled with God. That was the expectation. The modern day problems, our system has now been replaced with one of the greatest tools of the old deluders, Satan's arsenal, and that's secular humanism. This strikes at the hearts of vulnerable youth and is stripping our country of the very lineage of tradition and transcendent values and morality that we have, that this country's even lasted as long as it has. They've stripped it down. Take God out, put secular humanism in. You know, the Bible tells us to train up a child in the way he should go. Not in the way he should not go, but in the way he shall go. And when he is old, he shall not depart from it. And if you're sending your children to public schools, or your grandchildren are going to public schools, and you're not offsetting the secular humanism, they're being trained up in the way that Satan shall go. And when they grow old, they will depart from Christ. That's a dangerous thing to say, but it's a dangerous thing to do. If we're not counteracting the effects of what our kids are being exposed to today, shame on us. Secular humanism teaches that we should be wise in our own eyes and clever on our own sight. Isaiah 5:21. Results have been in the statistics of American youth. Every day in America, 2,054 teenagers will become pregnant. 640 teenage girls will go in for an abortion. 27,397 teenagers will contract a sexually transmitted disease. 2.7 million teenagers will bring a weapon to school every day in America. 8,219 children are victims of violence every day in America. 349 teachers are physically assaulted by the students every day in America. 4 teenagers will commit murder. 22 will be murdered. And 5,479 will attempt suicide every single day in America. While you're eating your grape nuts or having your cup of coffee in the morning, look at these statistics and tell me they don't move you in some way. Last year, 2.8 million teenagers every day in America will use an illegal drug, and 2.4 million will use alcohol. 434,000 graduated from high school last year who are functionally illiterate, can barely, or if not at all, read their high school diploma. Shame on us for turning our back on God the way we have. You can't. Reading and understanding the world as God sees it is a prerogative and a desire of God. And when we pull our kids away from that, it never goes any well. It never will go well. America used to be the leader in education in the world. Countries from all over the world came to America 200 years ago and said, "How are you doing that?" Alexis de Tocqueville and others would study it out and they'd say, "How are you doing that?" And they'd all come to the same conclusion. This is a religious people. This is what people who love Christ do. They want to know more about their God, and they can't know more if they're ignorant. We used to lead the world. Now we're leading in the wrong categories. Among industrialized nations, we are a leader in illiteracy, teen pregnancy, violence, drug and drug use, alcohol use. Not what the founding fathers intended. That's not what they wanted. Signer of Declaration of Independence, Samuel Adams, he said concerning this, "Let statesmen and patriots unite in their endeavors to renovate the age by what? Educating their little boys and girls, leading them in the study and practice of exalted virtues of a Christian system." Could have never done anything today, or could have he? Having that attitude, Governor Morris of Pennsylvania, I'm not misspelling his name here, that's how it's spelled. He literally wrote the words of the Constitution. You look at the Constitution, that's his handwriting. Here's what he said. He spoke 173 times for the ratification of the Constitution. He adamantly believed, quote, "Education should teach the precepts of religion and the duties of man towards God." That's what the government leaders were saying back then. Do you realize if you had someone stand up in Washington and speak that way today, CNN and even Fox and all the liberal media would say, his career is done. Shame on us. They were convinced that the next generation would not follow the teachings of God. There may not be another generation that feared God. Today we have the most unevangelized generation in the history of our nation. And they're going to have kids. We have to educate, educate, educate. And we have to teach history. Not just American history, but more importantly, biblical history. Because they based the American history and wanting to avoid it on what they learned from the Bible and other countries who went the way of the world. Their reasoning is very simple. How can a person understand the laws of man if they can't understand the laws of God? Which laws of man come from? Our inalienable rights are based in a creator who created us. Equal. That's what they said. And that's what they all sign. John Quincy Adams, that sixth president of the United States that I quoted earlier about the 3 to 4 tenths of 1% rate of literacy, or illiteracy in our country. Here's what he said. So great is my veneration for the Bible that the earlier my children begin to read it, the more confident will be my hope that they will prove useful citizens of their country and respectable members of society. I have for many years made it my practice to read through the Bible once every year. And that's as being a president. He had lots of things he had to read. But he still found the time to read through it at least one time a year. With such an emphasis on godly education from the scriptures, the results were stunning. I want to give you just a few facts. 123 out of the first 126 colleges in America were founded by churches. By churches. Harvard, the first motto was this: for the glory of Christ. Not Harvard, yes. Their second motto was for Christ and the church. You can't even say Christ at Harvard now without being a two-headed alien. Princeton's motto, cursed be all the learning void of the cross of Christ. Harvard, Yale, William and Mary, Brown, Princeton, New York University were all started for training preachers. Not for training activists, training preachers. Most of the colleges required mandatory study of the Bible like you'd have at Harding. You had to have a devo every day. It started out with the chapel, and you had to have study of Scripture every day before you started. Now the world thinks Harding and OVU and Christian colleges are weird. You actually have the Bible? You require people to go to chapel? Uh-huh. You're not? We never changed. You changed. The instruction of Yale in 1743. Yale, okay, the bastion of liberalism, stated, quote, above all have an eye to the great end of your studies, which is to obtain the clearest conceptions of divine things and lead you to a saving knowledge of God and His Son, Jesus Christ. Wow. If you went up to Yale today with your little microphone and held out, Do you know what the first motto was of the school? It'd be far from that, what most people would say. But yet that's how they were founded. These great institutions of higher learning, which have gone against the knowledge of God, 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 3 through 5, they started out with a Christian theme. George Washington summed it up quite well in a speech to Delaware Indians. There were some Delaware Indians that they were going to set a school up for. These were some chiefs. On May 12th, 1779, about enrolling Native Americans into the school, he said, quote, you do well to learn our arts and ways of life, and above all, religion of Jesus Christ. These will make you greater and happier people than you are. Congress will do everything we can to assist in this wise intention. President of the United States, one on your $1 bill. Next time you're in school or at a college campus and you have a $1 bill, before you put it in the machine, remember what Washington said to the Indians. You do well. He was speaking to a group of chiefs. You do well, and we'll do everything we can to assist you to find Jesus Christ. Present situation should make us sick to our stomachs, cause the founding fathers to roll over in their graves. We can't do anything about that, but what we can do is this. Here's your application. Number one, teach our youth a godly education. Teach our youth a godly education. If you have a son or a daughter still living at home, or both, make sure you cover this history. Cover that history with them. Give them a godly education in the Bible. Do that. Read Devo. Study. Shut off the video games, okay? Turn off the television. Open books, starting with the Bible, and teach them to read, and to read well, and to read much. Okay? Now, I'm sure I'm going to get a letter to the editor in the bulletin from some of you kids. You got my video game taken away. You got my Pac-Man taken away. You can play Pac-Man when you're in the nursing home, okay? It'll still be around.
Yes, sir.
You got a life to live and a God to serve. So not only teach our youth godly education, but number two, teach our youth to teach other youth. Teach our youth to teach other youth. We need to put them in a position to teach others also. You start with them, but then just because they have that information, we need to equip them. The best way to reach the youth out in this world is with our well-educated, well-trained youth. We're going to be gone. They have to reach out to their peers. Train up your children to be salt and light of the world. Encourage them to walk in the light. Teach them the skill of communication. Teach them to earnestly contend for the faith which was once delivered unto the saints, and to give an account of the truth that is in them. Teach them to do that. Equip them. Teach them to teach teachers. Teach them to teach everyone. Well, I'm really going to get some non-love mail from the youth, aren't I? But that's okay. You'll be glad down the road. If there's a conscious effort to reach out and war, we're at war. I don't like that, Doug. Paul says the weapons of our warfare are not of this world. Oh, okay, that war. Yeah. It's through the mighty pulling down of the mighty fortresses that go contrary to the knowledge of God. That's what we're doing. We're warring. You don't even have to go down and get a concealed carry permit to do what we need to do. Just conceal this right there. He's grabbing for something. Oh, it's a Bible. Yeah, and have it just like that. And I want to challenge you this week. Okay? I'm going to give you a simple challenge. How many here have seen the 180 movie? Raise your hand. Okay? Can you remember this? Everybody write this down. 180. Okay? Movie, M-O-V-I-E. .com. Go there, watch that 33-minute movie this week. Do that. If you want to see the way that we could train our youth to win, not arguments, but to win souls. To win hearts over to what God stands for. There's many different layers of it, but this is exciting. You'll see like entire, I'm talking giant mohawk tattooed, foul mouth. They bleep everything out. It's clean in that way. But these are some hateful people who are very much for abortion, very much against God. But by the end of these simple street interviews, they say they won't even vote for a politician that would ever be for abortion. They say they need to go home and read their Bibles and to learn more about Christ. These are total people. So go and watch that movie this week and let that be the fuel to charge you to see that you can make a difference. Teach your youth a godly education, your grandchildren, great-grandchildren. Some of you have great-great-great-grandchildren. Go for that too. And teach our youth to teach other youth. If we will do that, if we'll live up to this charge this week, you'll be happy for a lot of weeks to come. Think about that while we stand and sing.